Welcome to I Am Volleyball's podcast, where we serve up bite-sized discussions on all things volleyball. Whether you're a seasoned player, a passionate fan, or just curious about the sport, join us as we dive into various volleyball topics in short, action-packed episodes.
All right, our episodes are going to be about a little shout-out to our players that are doing exceptionally well, some off-the-wall topics. We'll also be doing some skills and drills, and then we'll cap it off with a little bit of what's new every month. As we proceed.
So grab your knee pads, lace up your shoes, and get ready to bump, set, and spike your way through some exciting volleyball conversations.
All right, so let's jump into the action here and explore the world of volleyball together. Get ready for some quick sets, powerful serves, and smashing discussions with I Am Volleyball. Good afternoon. This is Jared Liedtke from I Am Volleyball, and I'm here with
Austin Cass, also from I Am Volleyball.
What's going on, AC?
Not much, J-Rod.
All right, so I'm going to get it kicked off today with our first shout-out ever and of the season. Our shout-out today is going to be from the 12 Red, one of my teams, my team, and it's going to be for Maddie. Man, the team's been red hot, I'll tell you.
Dude, unstoppable.
Yeah, they've been red hot, but Maddie hit 417 on 48 sets, 24 kills.
Oh my God.
And only four errors in the Badger Region Championship Open Division last weekend.
That's unreal.
Yeah, I haven't really talked to these kids about being in the zone yet, but she was definitely in the zone. Wherever we gave her the ball, she moved her feet to it and got a good swing. That doesn't even include the jump topspin serve she was doing all weekend, just keeping the pressure on the other team.
Dude, she played so well that past weekend. I got a chance to watch her play. Jump topspin serves, outside just dominating, multiple sets, just attacking. Even when she made one of those four errors, she came back right away with another swing and then adjusted some swings to go even harder cross. You just don't see that at 12 years old, so that was pretty cool.
Yeah. I'd like to say I taught her all of it, but, you know, some of it's natural. I gotta give her credit.
No, man. That's all you. That's all you. Take that credit. All right. Our off-the-wall topic today is the coin toss. How crucial is that coin toss? Did you know that there's more than just picking serve or receive?
I obviously do, Mr. Cass. AC.
Oh, man. This is where J-Ron and I disagree on what you should do for the coin tosses. Jared is very advantaged to what he has. Yeah. So I'll let you kick it off and tell us a little bit what you like to do for the coin toss.
Well, a lot of people think there are only two options, serve and receive. But,
true.
I like to always give my kids every advantage they can get. So we tend to take side.
Side?
Side, yes.
What? That's an option?
Yeah, it is. Coach Ryden and I have talked about this so many times, and you go into gyms and there's certain advantages on one side versus the other.
That's true.
It's always at the convention center. If we're close to a wall, we're going to take that side that's facing the wall.
For that depth perception,
For the
right?
depth perception on serve receive. It's better. It's easier.
That's true. There's advantages to that. There's big advantage over at the Recplex down in Pleasant Prairie where they have giant windows from floor to ceiling. Depending on the type of day, can really affect some of those courts. So there is some side effects on that one. And then I think in the Champion Center,
There's
some serving advantages just by an extra, what?
It depends.
3 feet, 2 feet, 4 feet?
It's
enough feet for Jared to to notice.
Yeah, and actually it was less me than it was Ryan. And, one referee would allow you to go all the way to the wall. The other referee wouldn't allow you to go in the dark wood.
Ooh.
So it was kind of weird. So when we got to the ref that would allow us to go to the wall, and we watched the other team do it in the quarterfinals, they thought they were going to stay on that side, and we won the flip, and we chose side.
Oh, my gosh.
For that extra 4 feet of serving.
You know what? I would never.
Zero footfalls.
That's. I guess you're not wrong on that one.
And we always have footfalls.
I've never picked side on it. I send out my captain, let them choose whatever they want. I could care less if it's serve or receive. I'm confident either way. And we always usually just pick serve, and then occasionally there's a team that's going to pick side. And I go, how dare you? Where do you get off? Yeah, that's my mindset. Like, all of a sudden people are coming over, I'm like, you forget your water bottle or something? And they're like, oh no, we're switching sides. And I'll, the walk across from
each
other.
But the thing is so many people I've seen, like, after a game finishes, they like rush on the court to fight for the side.
Yeah.
And it's like, why? Just win the flip and take it.
And if you lose the flip, they're probably not going to say anything because they have their side.
They take serve.
Oh, you might be convincing me right now.
And then you take side.
And then you give them the switch. And that, I just don't want to put that target on my back.
That actually happened in the semifinals. They chose serve. We chose side.
I wonder if refs ask every single time, like, are you good with that side? Or they say serve, receive, and then just move on.
They say serve, receive.
So, that is an unlocked, you know, thing that you could pick for that. So, captains doing coin tosses, make sure you're...
Talk to your coaches. Maybe they want a side. And yeah. I'll tell you, when I played, I hated being on that side of convention center when those lights are in my eyes. That depth perception is really real.
That's true. That's true. Well, I guess we'll never know if I pick side. Well, I don't think we'll ever do it, but maybe if it's a championship and we're trying to get them, you know, freak them out, we're going to pick side. And,
when you do it, let me know how it goes.
That'll be the day. That will be the day. So, J-Rod, what's going to be our skills and drills for this month?
Well, I think this time we're going to talk a little bit about hitting.
Nice.
And it's impossible for us to cover every facet of hitting.
True.
In one little podcast, but we're going to get started. You know, we'll chip away at this thing.
Nice. So, J-Rod, you coach the 12s. You are the head of our I Am Next program. What are some of the things that you start off at that young age to develop those hitters? What's important to you?
The first thing and the most important thing is the approach. You know, if you can't have a good approach or don't have a good approach, then you need to develop one. And it's such an important part of the process for young hitters because it's something that you have to do naturally. Because once the ball's in the air, you forget about everything you're taught.
Oh, yeah.
And it needs to be almost an automatic reaction.
Yeah.
So I tend to, I know our teams, like when we were younger, until everybody had it, we were doing approaches for the first 10 minutes of every practice.
So what's the most important part about that approach?
Oh, those last two steps, man. It doesn't really matter what you do before that, but just taking those last two steps, opening up those hips, getting back and getting a good, get your arms back really, really far, almost past parallel to the ground. If you can get to that position where you're loaded, I call that the loaded position, usually you can get a pretty good exploded position and get up into that bow and arrow. But yeah, those last two steps are the only ones that matter. I really don't care what anybody does before that. I teach them the three-step, four-step approach, but I start off everybody with the flamingo. You do the flamingo?
Love the flamingo. Still do it at the older ages with the 15 and up, and in our summer camps, we make sure that flamingo, those last two steps, are locked in so then we can add on top of that.
Flamingo, I think that's the best way to get people that are goofy-footed, which is taking the approach with the wrong feet. Converted over is just start them in flamingo.
Yeah. You catch them at the younger age and be able to do that, definitely helps out. As you get older, it's a lot harder to change because that habit's going to be ingrained. So once their approach is all done, and I'm a big fan of that two-step, we move into what we call the closing step. So you're taking those four steps, those transition steps. It all comes down, like maybe you're a quick transition off, you don't get that big approach, you still need that closing step to the ball. Inside set, outside set, perfect set, close on it, and be quick and dynamic. So that's what we build on from that big approach is the closing steps, those last two steps.
Those last two. You know, and I really focus with all the players I work with. I have them do it during practice or during the next program, but if they're not doing 25 to 30 at home, if they really want to fix it or they really want to have a good one, you need to be doing them every day at home because, like I said, I think the number's probably around 1,000 approaches.
To build that habit.
But after you get that 1,000, you get that habit in, you don't have to touch it anymore. You can tweak it along the way, but for the most part, you're going to do the right steps and you're going to do the right things.
Yeah, if you can get that basis down of the footwork, then the rest of it gets a lot easier. If you struggle from the beginning there, hitting could be inconsistent or not enough power, not enough snap. All this stuff builds on top of that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's good that we're attacking those approaches at a young age so that they can build at it when they get older.
You know, one thing I've been focusing on a little bit is for the players at the younger age, because they really don't hit the ball down, is really to hit the ball with shape and spin. So I know we've talked about snap many times throughout our careers together.
Yep, yep.
Like, different ways they don't have snap. They don't have
top spin. How do you get it? Yeah, figuring that out.
But yeah, really using a different language and using shape and spin, you know, to really trying to get that ball to move the way you want it to and not come out flat. I like them to start with really a positive hand rather than a negative hand when they're swinging.
What does that mean?
Positive hand meaning it's at least parallel to your arm. It can't be bent backwards at all when they start their swing, because usually they don't catch up and they'll hit actually with backspin.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas if you stay at least parallel or actually bent a little bit forward with your hand, and that's your starting position, there's a good chance you're going to get that proper spin on the ball and be able to control it a lot more, because it's all about control of the ball.
Right. And getting that spin is great, especially if you're not jumping higher. If you can jump higher, you can get away with some knuckleball swings. You know, the boys do that. You know, you jump high, hit hard, and you give them a knuckleball. Hard to dig, but you got to jump high to do that. And then getting that spin, I use the term slicing the ball. And I got that from Art of Coaching at some point, where you would just want to slice that ball. Not so much like snap into it, but you're slicing the top of the ball, like you're peeling it to create that top spin. Yeah. And that's kind of worked, and kind of, like you said, using different words to break through to these kids for that. So, yeah, that's what I use. So you use shape and spin.
Yeah.
And I go slicing into it, and it's all good from there.
Right?
So hitting approaches, footwork, we'll come back to this topic another day to keep adding to it, because he said we could talk forever about hitting. But, yeah, get those approaches down, people, so that you guys can keep building on top of that.
All right, so to finish off this podcast, we're always going to talk about something that's new or important to IM Volleyball, and this is something that's extremely important to you and I and our IM family, and that's our legacy players.
That's right. We started that when some of our youngest players, when we first started the club at that development stage, have been playing club for us all the way through until that 17s age group, which is most people's final year of playing club volleyball. And our legacy program, or our legacy jackets that we hand out, go to these kids that only played for IM. They've never taken a year off, and they've had to start sometime in middle school or younger to continue through that. So we got a big shout out to three awesome players that are part of our legacy program this year.
Yes, we do. I know Sophie Kranich, she's been with us for an extremely long time. I think she started when she was at least 8 years old on a team, competing down in the Burlington tournament, tens tournament. It's super fun, but she's been with us. Congratulations, Sophie. Sophia Verplanke, she's also been with us a long time. Super excited for her to achieve that legacy jacket also. And our third one is going to be McKenna Berg. McKenna's been with us for a long time. I know I've worked with her quite a bit. She's progressed so much, and super proud of those three ladies and what they've represented for IM.
Absolutely.
And the family we have here. Their commitment to IM and positive encouragement of not only their teammates but other players inside our organization. It's been amazing. And
super nice kids. Oh, super nice families. Like you said, representing IM Volleyball, playing for us for all these years, and you know the legacy that they're leaving behind as we grow. It's all part of the kids that stick with us all the way through. So it's very exciting, and we hope they love their jackets. We hand out jackets to all our legacy players, and so that they can represent that and be special, because they are special to us. And hopefully someday they'll come back after college or whatever they're doing, if they stay nearby, and become coaches and give back to the kids.
Back to the kids, back to the game.
Man. Yeah. And if we're lucky enough, you and I, we still play volleyball, maybe we'll be able to play volleyball with them.
Yes.
Someday. You're not a team. Show them the adult volleyball world.
Left.
That's true.
So
awesome job. Thank you, guys.
All All right, so 'tis the holiday season in Austin. So it's going to be April 1st here, isn't
it? Yeah, when this podcast drops, it's going to be April 1st. We've done some fun stuff on those days in years past.
What do you mean?
You know, our April Fools, let's see, what would
we need
done? April Fools! April Fools! Oh, you've probably been fooled all day, haven't you? Oh, man. We've had some pretty good ones here. Just kind of recapping some of our April Fools we've done in the past. We've come out with protein bars and protein shakes for eyeball, all the eyeballs branded ones.
Yeah.
We've also done a Head Start program for toddlers, like 2-year-olds, 1-year-olds playing volleyball. It's never too early to start. We had a couple signups for that. We've also put out a facility, which is pretty crazy.
That's one of my favorite ones.
That was one. We got some people on that one. That was, found a really cool picture with some red courts. And, hey, this looks like an I Am Volleyball facility. We've done a trip to the Caribbean for all of our red teams.
Yeah.
Really sold that. I had a really good sell
on
that, saying we got plane tickets. It's been a big dream. We saved up enough money. We might have made some people upset about that, and we might have got a few more players to join our club to find out later.
Maybe someday we'll do that.
Maybe. Oh,
we never know.
That's what my goal on these April Fool's jokes are, is that someday maybe they'll become real. Get my protein bar, have my 1-year-old start playing volleyball immediately, get that facility, go to the Caribbean, and then, of course, we had the lifetime membership last year.
Yeah.
No one bought on that one, you know, for real, so we didn't get any of those donations for their lifetime memberships. Maybe the price was too high on that. So, yeah.
It's close.
But
it'll be interesting to see what we do this year.
Yeah, I don't know what we're going to do this year. This podcast has been a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And,
Happy April Fools.
Happy April Fools, everybody.
Check it out.
And, so that wraps up our first and maybe just our first. We'll see where this goes.
April,
I Am Volleyball Podcast. We hope you enjoy diving into the world of volleyball with us. So don't forget to subscribe to our podcast and leave us a review. Your feedback helps. If it's negative, keep it to yourself. If it's positive, we love to hear it. So if you have any burning questions, just shoot us a message on social media. We'd love to hear some topics to talk about with you guys.
All right, until next time, keep practicing those serves, perfect sets, digs. Make sure you're diving on that court. And thank you for tuning in.
Where the love for volleyball never stops. This is Austin Cass.
And I'm Jared Lidke.
Signing off. That's game.
Set.
Match.